Hello and how are you, all you pet heads and petrified out there in the world. Thank you once more for pressing play on Rock, the Petrospective. I'm Lindsay Hall.
And I'm Dave Hall.
And you know, Dave, this Petra album, Dave, was a little bit of a dark horse for me. I'd forgotten how much of it I was actually familiar with. I'm familiar with quite a bit of it. I'm wondering how many of these songs you might have thrown onto a mixtape when we were listening to our family trips. Is that something that you ever did?
I'm pretty certain there were a few of these songs that would have ended up on mixtapes. Certainly a lot of the songs that we knew from our own church experience and youth experiences would certainly have been thrown onto mixtapes. So, yeah, we would have had a few of them out there. We did play this album a lot.
See, I don't remember that as much. To me, this is an album that I never really came to intentionally a great deal, but I find myself very familiar with these renditions of quite a few popular praise and worship songs, songs that we were doing in church. And like they do with most things, Petra did them better.
We are, of course, talking today about Petra Praise, The Rock Cries Out. This was an album that when I got, and maybe the reason you didn't hear it so much is I probably listened to, this is at the time when I had my own Walkman. Anyone remember Walkmans? Anyone of our listeners remember Walkmans? This got a lot of play. I remember I burned this tape to the point that it died. I mean, I'd made a copy of the tape to keep so that I, and was encouraged to use that. Someone told me that if you buy an original cassette, this is the first album I got on cassette, not on LP. Make a dub copy of it for yourself and play that the most so you don't kill the original. Well, both copies died eventually. And then I end up going out and buying it on CD. So that's how much you play this guy.
It's quite an interesting one. This is almost the textbook definition of crossover appeal. This is a band that has hit it big with the youth market because they're doing hard rock or 80s rock, and they've got a very strong following coming behind them. Finally starting to get some more mainstream acceptance amongst the older generations of the church, and they hit with this album. Kids are able to take this up and say to their mum and dad, here, it's the songs that you listen to. And so they've got an excuse to listen to it as a family. But when I asked Mr. Hartman whether there was a particular time in his journey with the band that held a special significance, a real soft spot and a real special place in his heart and in his memories, he said it was around the time that they were doing the Petra Praise album. But he expounded on that, and it was really quite touching to hear. And what it really boils down to is, as he saw it and as he experienced it, this was a period for the band. He saw them having the greatest and most widespread impact for the gospel, and was seeing people come to know Jesus through the ministry that was happening as a result of this album. And I think it incorporates sort of the transition from the On Fire, the tour of On Fire, and the space that they were in around then, because he also referenced it was the time that they were touring with
Josh McDowell.
There was greater acceptance into the church in general, into the older generations.
I think the interesting thing on that was the fact that he said that this was the time that a lot of senior pastors in churches began to accept the band. But he also noted that it was also a time when a lot of former youth pastors who had grown up listening to Petra in the early 80s were now becoming the senior pastors and were more open to the ministry of the band. But it's interesting because the heart of this album comes from the fact that as they were touring and hearing the hearts of the pastors, the youth pastors and stuff like that, the pastors were expressing the desire to hear, you know, that young people needed to be, you know, reached with worship. How do we get them to respond to worship? and that bore the heart of this album.
Now, this is coming at an interesting time, David. Petra have just made this decision to part ways with Star Song Records. They've moved to a new record label, Dayspring. And certainly there's the expectation, we're going to expect you to do these number of albums with us. Those things are par for the course. But Bob says, this is the first, among the first interactions they have. They go to the label and say, hey guys, this is an album that we want to do. And he said, the execs just couldn't get it. They just didn't get what they were wanting to do with this album.
Even while they were recording it, the executives kept coming up to them and saying, why are we doing this? What's this? You want to do what? You want to do it how? And it's very interesting that the heart of the band brought forth an album that really was very counter to what the church was at the time. And I guess, you know, Lindsay and I were talking before we started recording about the fact that in the 80s and at this time period, most praise and worship music was coming either out of churches or it was coming like it was the songs of the praise, songs of the kingdom, Maranatha, Graham Kendrick. It's all very piano, very acoustic guitar, very light, very choral feel, very easy to listen to. Praise songs were fast, worship songs were slower, but it was all very simple. There was nothing like this album out there. I mean, they were breaking ground. They were breaking ground that had never been done before. 1989, this album got released. And just to put some things into context, so we talked about that style of, you know, the church music. Hillsong Church, probably the number one seller of Christian worship music in the world for the last 20, 25 years. Darlene Check, Reuben Morgan, you know, everyone knows, you know, where Hillsong sits, United, all that sort of stuff. They really only started releasing albums in a big way from 1990. Their first big release album worldwide was released in 1990. Here in Australia, there was Hills had released a couple of albums in the Australian market beforehand that were doing, you know, you do in church and stuff like that. Very simple, very piano feel. And they'd released a couple of youth albums. It was a Youth Alive was what it was called. And they did big youth rallies, but it was just an evening, a church service for young people. And even then, the music was still very light, very keyboard led. There were drums, but it wasn't as prominent. But even those albums, 1989, 1990. And this is what music, praise and worship music was in the late 80s, early 90s. It was what you would hear in a church service. And Petra do something that no one had done before. We fast forward a few years. We live now, today, I think you'd agree with me, Lindsay, the world we live in today, Christian music-wise, worship music is probably the dominant genre of Christian music releases at the top end of things, I think. A lot of bands come out of churches. A lot of singers come out of churches. Sorry, yeah. What were you going
to
say?
I was just saying, if a Christian today wants to get into the market, build their career or living as a recording artist, most of them are doing some form of worship music, or their songs can easily enough be adapted to a church context. In interviews, they might say that they didn't write them specifically for churches, but they can certainly be used in that manner quite easily. These days, musicians and artists who want to write in a particular genre or with a particular style in mind are niche market. They really are a minority.
Even the mainstream artists these days, mainstream Christian artists, Michael W. Smith, probably the number one Christian artist in the world today for many years now, more and more he keeps releasing worship-based albums, songs that you do in church. And we get it over and over. But here's a timeline for you. Petra released Petra Praise, The Rock Cries Out in 1989. I've always felt that the beginnings of the rise of bands doing worship music or songs that can be sung in church probably really starts to become prominent with Delirious. Delirious released Cutting Edge in 1995. The Cutting Edge albums in 1995. That's 7 years after Petra Praise. And I think Delirious were the start. In 1997, you've got Matt Redman, who released his Intimacy album, The Heart of Worship. And even then, that's one of those albums where not all the songs you do in church, but there were songs on that album that I remember became really big in church. But it wasn't until 2000 to 2003 that almost every artist then started to release worship albums. Rebecca St. James, Newsboys, Michael W. Smith, Third Day, you name it, everyone released them. But that was 12 to 13 years after Petra Praise, The Rock Cries Out. Petra broke ground for the music, Christian music industry with this album. And we are still feeling those repercussions today.
They've always been trailblazers. It's almost as though Bob Hartman is a musical futurist. He knows where the popular sentiment is going, and he steers the band in those directions to some extent. It's quite incredible. They get this idea at a time when Dave Spring, I'm sure, are expecting to release On Fire Part 2, or This Means War Part 3, however you want to view it. And they come up to them and say, actually, we want to do a bunch of church songs. Well, hold on a second. That's what, there are crews that run around and they do recording nights at different churches over a series of months and then put together an album based on the best recordings they get from each church. That's how those church worship songs get done on albums. Bands don't do this kind of thing. Bob Hartman and team are sitting there going, well, that's what we're going to do. And I almost picture like the meetings with John Schlitz sitting there in his chair, bouncing up and down, jittery, because he just can barely hold in his excitement at the fact that I'm just going to be singing worship songs to God. This is going to be so awesome. It's going to be singing worship songs to God.
And I think the irony of that, I think we've shared this before. I've heard John Schlitz talk about his testimony. I've heard an interview with his testimony. He shared the fact that after he became a Christian, he didn't sing for a while, and he was going to church and he was trying to look at how can I use my voice? How can I use my gifts for God? And he joined or asked to be part of his church's worship team. And the very first time he was a part of the worship team, the senior pastor came up to him after the service and said, I don't think you should ever do that again. And here he is releasing an album of praise and worship. He's on that. Yeah. And I think what's really key is when you look at the credits of the album, Bob Hartman and John Lowry are credited quite strongly right at the beginning. The album is produced and arranged by Bob Hartman and John Lowry. Mm. This wasn't a John and Dino Elefante are still part of the production, but this was the brainchild and led by the band. John and Bob at the forefront of that. They were putting the structure, they were putting how the feel, they were putting what they wanted at the forefront. And the impact is big. This was the first album that Petra ever had that went gold. And you think about that. As great as Petra had been, Petra Praise, this test album, this dangerous album, this you know, something that could have, if it didn't work, could have been catastrophic for the band with a new label. First album that went gold. They won a Dove Award for this album. This album had a massive impact. It's still one of their biggest selling. At the time it was released, it became the biggest selling album that Petra had ever made.
Bob writes a couple of songs for this album, but I have to imagine part of the process was in saying, what are 12 of the most well-known worship songs that are going at the moment? I suppose 12 well-known ones that really resonate with us, because you're not going to get a lot of effect and heart if they're not resonating with you as the artist. So
that's right.
They pick these 12 songs. Bob writes an additional two. It's almost a giving something back to the people who have followed them and supported them and championed them for so many years. You know, you can, when I was writing my songs and my music and stuff that was just coming from my heart and I was putting it out there, you guys all came. Now you've got something that you need. Well, I want to feed into that space. Let me do this for you. This is, in that regard, like there's a wonderful element of selflessness about an album.
There's actually a section where it talks about you can get the recordings so that you could sing them at youth. There were songbooks available. There was a music book. I bought the Petra Praise music book. I still have it. It sits in with my guitar and my other music stuff. I've got the Petra Praise music book. I remember using it. Me and some of the guys in our youth group tried to form a little youth band for church. We never got anywhere with it because we weren't dedicated enough to actually practice regularly. But it was a big giving back to the church. They released the album in Spanish. The first time a Petra album was released in Spanish.
Yep.
And I mean, that's, I know down here in Australia, that doesn't mean a lot, but I know in America, there are a lot of Spanish, especially in sort of California and the southern end of the US, there's a lot of Spanish-speaking Mexican immigrants who love God. They recorded this album so that they could reap the benefits in their churches. It's an album for the church.
It is. Well, Dave, I mean, Spanish is the single most widely spoken language on the planet. Mm. So there's that for a start. It makes a lot of sense. If you're doing something like this as a blessing for the church, you do it in Spanish. Good mate of mine, he was telling me about his experience with this album just the other day. Very specifically, the song Take Me In was one that featured very, very, very strongly in his upbringing, in the churches that he attended as a young Spanish-speaking kid in Australia with Spanish-speaking congregations who were still trying to come to grips with the English language. And he was familiar with it from the Petra Praise album, but couldn't understand, but he'd never heard it anywhere else and couldn't understand why it seemed to be such a big deal. Because it wasn't just his Spanish-speaking church, he said. It was every Spanish-speaking church that he would go to would be doing that song. And he hadn't known this, and I was able to tell him, mate. Well, let me tell you. In 1992, they released the entire album in Spanish. And he said, oh, that makes a whole lot of sense now. More than anything Petra had ever done, more than anything most bands think to do, this album was produced to a broad, broad audience.
And yet at the same time, it kept the heart of the sound of Petra.
That's absolutely right.
The music is Petra. And I think that's the key. It's for a broader audience, but it's still their heart and their ministry. And I think that's the biggest thing to recognize in all that.
Now, it's a transition point in many ways for the band, transitioning into a new record label. Fortunately, for the first time in who can remember how long, we're not transitioning a new band member. The lineup remains steady and the same.
Mm.
But David, we are saying goodbye to contracted artists and designers for our album covers. And we are entering the age of the photographers, the portrait masters, the landscapers, Petra Praise, The Rock Cries Out, the first of the photographed album covers, where we feature in what I have to say is one of my favorite kinds of album cover photos, an utterly magnificent landscape shot where they've placed the band in a place where the first thing that crosses your mind is, how on earth did they get up onto that high rock all on their own? New kind of album cover, a new kind of statement for the band's journey here. But David, where do you rate the Petra Praise, The Rock Cries Out album cover?
You know what? It's actually a really good album cover. I mean, you have within it the thematic concept, The Rock Cries Out, you have this rocky desert feel. The credit in the album cover says that the photo was taken in New Mexico, which I know is quite a desert region. And you've got this rock outcrop, which looks, like you said, magnificent. And then standing on the rock alcove is the band. John with his arm in the air, each member just standing there in a line. This image of the band crying out to God, it really fits the theme. I quite like this album cover. It's actually a very good album cover. I think it's quite highly, I revere it quite highly. I think it would sit quite highly on the album cover list myself. What about you?
I agree. I'm gonna go out right now and say hands down, this is my favorite of Petra's photo album covers. They had a handful of these now through the 90s. They never get better than this. As you say, I agree completely. It's a statement about the album, about the band. It portrays a sense of grandness about the album and about what, you know, the intention and the heart behind it. This photographer did a fantastic job. I don't know the name of the fellow. Let me see if I've got anything here.
It's in the credits here. I'll read it to you. It's in the credits here. The photographer, the cover concept was Lauren Bauman. The cover design was Jackson Design in Nashville, Tennessee. And the photographer's name was Mark Tucker.
All right, Mr. Tucker, well done. I don't know if he was standing on an adjoining outcrop or if he was in a helicopter or what.
I think he was in a helicopter. The album cover credits the use of helicopters, like thanking an organization for allowing them to use a helicopter.
I have to assume you got a helicopter dropping them off so they can pose on that rock. Anyway, it's really awesome. It's really great. It's the first album cover that includes the band. It's amazing that we are at album number 11 and 11th studio album, sorry,
yes,
12th album overall, and this is the first one that's really included the band and featured the band.
Where do you rank it compared to others? How do you see it compared to other albums?
It's hard. My first instinct is to want to say that these should be in a separate category, but I don't think it works that way. No, we're keeping it in line here. I'm putting it. We've got number one is This Means War, right?
That's correct. And number More Power to You is two number two.
Is More Power to You. I'm slotting it in at number three.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think it is a clear. I think we've got three clear different time periods and three clear album standouts there, and I totally agree with that statement. I think there's something special about the This Means War and More Power to You album covers, but the Petra Praise I think really, really stands out. I mean, we've got number. Below that, we've got Washes Wider Than. I think this really is a step up from what was on the Washes Wider Than.
I agree. Washes Wider Than, like I've always said, is a gimmick cover. It's fun. It's really well designed. But it's largely a gag. Whereas the strength that More Power to You and This Means War demonstrate is covers that really capture something of the emotion and the atmosphere of the album. And this one does that as well, only we're using photos now, so.
Well, this album came at an interesting transitional time for our family as well, because I remember, so I shared last episode how I went to Petra's On Fire tour in Australia, and they announced during the concert that the album was coming out soon. So I started saving my pocket money, and I remember this album came out before Christmas, because I had bought it myself But the day after Christmas, we went to what in Australia is referred to as Beach Mission. For those of you who live in other parts of the world and wonder, what does the Beach Mission, what is that? Basically, in Australia at Christmas time, Christmas in Australia is in summer. For those of you who live in the Northern Hemisphere with winter and cold and ice, no, down in Australia, it's summer, beach and water. And a lot of families, because it's Christmas holidays, take the opportunity to travel. They travel to what we call caravan parks, where you can, you know, rent caravans, rent cabins, pitch tents, big areas with lots of, you know, lots of sites laid out for that venue. And what happens in Australia is there are Christian organizations that will go into these caravan parks and set up essentially an outreach mission for up to 2 weeks. And we, our family was invited to participate in one as of that year, as of 1989, Christmas 1989. And we went because our father, who is a pastor, was asked to speak at the Beach Mission. And I just remember distinctly sitting in the tent that I was sleeping in, listening to Petra Praise nearly every day while we were there. That's how I can picture the time frame of when we got it straight away, bought it. This is the first album I bought with my own money, and I would have purchased it within probably 4 weeks of release in Australia. So that's where we sit. I'm now at the point where I'm buying them as they come out.
That's pretty awesome. That might account for, were you sleeping with our family in the same spot, or were you in the team tents for the Beach Mission team around that time?
No, the first time we went, I was with the family. I was sleeping in the annex. The family, we were in a caravan the first year we went, and everyone slept in the caravan except me. I slept in the annex.
Right.
Because there was only a bunk bed in the caravan. Yeah. So I slept on an air mattress in the annex, and so I just had a little bit more room and time and space to myself. Yeah,
you had the better deal, which is what I always thought. What I remember most of those Beach Missions is me getting horrifically sick early on, and it was the first time I ever watched The Elephant Man. So it, you know, part of my film education happened there. But I wonder if hearing that song playing throughout Beach Mission might have been a part of my memories that I'm just not recalling as easily. But you're right, it's certainly that era and that time. And it's the time for me, like I'm a few years younger than you, but it's certainly a time when I'm starting to pay a lot of attention to the songs that we're singing in church and starting to latch on to my favorites. Now, not too long after this, Dave, our family is about to move. We're about to say goodbye to the church that we had been a part of for some time. And we find ourselves as children, you, me, and our sister, having to forge new relationships at a new church in a new experience with a new worship team. And in my head, sort of, part of what ties into this album is the church that we went to was a church that had a worship team, where we were coming from a church that had an organ player in the morning and a piano player at night.
And Dad on acoustic guitar.
And occasionally Dad would play acoustic guitar, but mostly it was that. But now we come to a church that's got a team, and we've got a team that's got a couple of guitarists, a keyboard player, a few singers, a drummer, and this is a big deal for us. But this starts to become the new normal, the new standard for how we're experiencing worship. And this album ties in well, because a number of these songs off this album are standards that even down here in Australia we are using. And I can particularly highlight, look, Salvation Belongs to Our God must be a worldwide phenomena song. It's really the lyrics of that song are ingrained in my very DNA. I can't get away from that song if I tried anymore. it's so pervasive. It was something that was sung in our churches, at our youth camps, at rallies that we went to. There's a good, there's got to be a good 5 year period there where you're doing it nearly every week.
Just about. And it was at a time where it didn't get, stale. You enjoyed that, really drew you in. So yeah, there was a lot of this stuff, but I mean, I think, you know, I was 13 when this album came out. I was the target audience. And for me, it was something different because this was my style of music, and I got so bored with organs and pianos and acoustic guitars. I got so bored with it. And this album came out and it was a breath of fresh air for me. It brought me to a new place of worship. I could worship God to this. As I learned some of the songs I didn't know, the songs that I did know, I was able to belt these out. My heart got drawn to God, and which is what they were targeting. And then, as you said, we went to a church where we had a bit more of the feel. We had drums, we had electric guitars, and we were able to create similar sounds. But the vibe, the feel, this even today, the past couple of weeks that I've been listening to this album have really drawn me into the presence of God. I found myself listening to this album and worshiping while I do it. It's because it draws me in. That's the feel. That's what they're trying to do, and it succeeds. It does it. And I guess as we start looking at each of these songs, we're going to see how some of them do it and the impact some of these songs have.
Yeah. Well, let's talk about both the Bob Hartman songs up front. Just tackle them in this way. Bob Hartman writes two songs that he's going to include on this album. It's a slightly different style of writing than he's done in the past because he is writing these with the intention that they fit in with this. These are songs that he's gifting to the church. They're praise and worship songs. We've talked about, Greg X. Voles in the old days kind of occupied that space for the band. And his songs were very oriented in that way. Here's Bob's efforts. Now, what I love about these is they're still very strongly infused with the Petra sound, with his style of songwriting, with his style of music. Obviously, the arrangement that they came to in the recording. I love the Lord, and the King of Glory shall come in. King of Glory shall come in is so fun. It is perfectly in that style, and it's something of a, I think what church music was favoring at that time in terms of the writing were closer to war songs, what you expect soldiers to sing, little songs that soldiers might sing in wartime. They have their links to that, roots in that kind of songwriting heritage.
King of Glory is based on, I mean, the biblical foundation of the song is the returning Israel army with the Ark of the Lord having reclaimed it in battle. Are returning to Jerusalem, bringing the ark back to the temple. They're coming to the gates of the city, and they're essentially singing this song. Who is the King of Glory? The King of Glory shall come in. We're bringing the ark. That's the foundation, the biblical foundation for the song, gives that warfare feel to it.
It does, but it's a little more musically complex than other, the rest of the songs on this album.
Yes, I've got this. It's a bit more complex than others.
You've got call and response, like almost a call and response in the chorus. Yeah. Who is this King of Glory? The Lord strong and mighty. It's nothing that a congregation can't pick up, but it's going to require a little bit more work to them than King of Kings and Lord of Lords Glory, another one which everyone knows. So it's that interesting hybrid where you've got a performance artist who is established in his genre stepping into this new genre, and in this case it's something that's not meant to be just for the artist or the band, it's meant to be for the corporate experience. It's just a little more complex. I like it. It's good. I really love it. I love The Lord. Not quite as complex.
Much simpler. Much simpler. But very, very enjoyable. It was very similar to the praise songs you were getting in church at the time.
Yes. And I mean, another one that feels this one feels iconically John Schlitt, actually.
Well, we're going to get into this in just a moment with some of the other songs. But, I mean, obviously both of these songs, the big key is the band sing these two songs. We're going to talk about in a moment the use of the choir and the other vocals for the other songs. But, I mean, this is John leading, John singing, the band backing. You get some really good band material in there. There's a really nice on I Love the Lord. There's a really nice catchy guitar riff. Ronnie's bass is driving, just like we were talking about in the last couple of albums, some real driving stuff. John Lowry's doing some pads underneath. The band do the backing vocals. There's a nice little guitar solo in there. It's sort of almost like a snapshot. This is Petra. If you've liked their last few albums, this is Petra snapshotted. In a praise song. Very simple. You could do it in church, but this is the feel of Petra. So Petra fans are immediately drawn in. Oh, this is what I like. And people who are hearing it from someone wants to maybe do this in church, are at least hearing a song that's simple, easy to follow, and move forward. I think I would have loved to have seen this song in concert. I think it would have been fun to have seen it in concert. When you get to King of Glory, who is, the King of Glory Shall Come In. Like you said, it's a bit more complex. The band do a few more complex things. John Lowry's doing runs up and down the keyboard, which sound absolutely awesome. Ronnie's playing a little bit more complex bass lines in it. Not as much of the intro. They're sort of straight in. And like you said, you get the call and response. And I think they make a good use of the choir vocals there with the Who Is This King of Glory? And then John gets the response. But both songs are – these two songs are the band.
Yeah.
And the band's sound and the band's feel. And they lay a great foundation.
They really do. But interestingly, almost to contrast that, King of Kings, which is the second song on the album, a chorus from way back in the day. We're talking Brown Book here, man. Which was the old
Songs of Praise, Songs early of 80s.
Late 70s, I think we might be talking.
Probably.
And this is what I mean by war chant. This is a war chant song. Very simple, repetitive phrases. Now there's the man's part and the woman's part. In an equal world, everyone can choose what they sing. I remember this very clearly from my earliest days in church. This was a popular one at our church growing up. They record this as a choral song. John's voice is almost lost in this recording.
Yeah,
because they're focusing
on
the chorus that they've got singing.
Yeah, John gives an underneath support. You hear him rack out a couple of liners here and there, but it is we get this choral feel. The you've got a choir. It's like there's a choir. I really like the start to this song. You've got these building keys, going, and then you've got the power chords of Bob comes in with power chords. The sound is actually quite simple. And driving, but I love it. You get the choir use, that the men do their bit, the women do their bit, then you get the breakdown, and then they go into double time. They pick it up, and you get a nice little finish. They do one chorus in the round. I probably would have liked to have heard it a little bit
maybe a couple of choruses in the round rather than just the last one. But yeah, it's nice and quick, and the sound is there, the power chords, the driving sound. But yeah, the choir comes into it, and John Schlitt disappears, and I think this is something we're going to talk about it ongoing, because there are times where John is almost, you can barely, he's barely heard, and then there are other songs where he's quite prominent. You know, look, I'm not sure why John's voice, why you couldn't have done something like John being a little bit more prominent with the men's sound. I think it would have worked just as fine, rather than drowning him out completely. But, you know, the sound is good.
But again, it might just come back to that place of wanting to, like, there are some songs that were as they were written, it's very much about the group singing them together. And this is that kind of song. There are songs that lend themselves well to having someone lead, or you could record it with a lead vocal. And there are others that are just, no, this is about a group of people singing. And
guess it would have appealed to the church, because if you're listening to it without a rock music background, you're hearing, well, we can do this in church. It's got a church feel to it. There is that choir, choral, congregational feel to it.
Yeah. Now, interestingly, the next one that I'm actually particularly familiar with, that I have some fond memories of, from around the time when I remember you starting to get involved in the church worship team, is The Battle Belongs to the Lord. This was
Are we skipping Jesus Glorious One, are we?
Just this one comes like more prominently to mind, like, you know, just for a moment there. Because this is kind of like a significant step forward in the journey of worship music from King of Kings, because Battle Belongs to the Lord is still very much a corporate song. And even the way they record it here, John is a little more prominent, but we're still leaning very, very heavily on the chorus.
But John's very prominent. It's very interesting because John in Battle Belongs to the Lord, he takes the lead, but you get a very different sound out of his voice. He's using a different range. He's not in his upper power range. He's actually singing a little bit lower.
Yeah.
And it's really beautiful. It's got a really nice feel to it. And then the choral sound comes in the chorus, and they build each time. We slow down the sound that we've got. We bring it down. John Lowry's doing some nice stuff. Ronnie's doing some amazing stuff on the bass in this song, and you slowly build each verse builds a little bit more, and then in the third chorus, John goes into his power range and hits that power sound, with a bit of a guitar solo supporting the song, and then in the final chorus, John's vocals just rock. I mean, it's a building song.
It starts
quiet, and it builds, and it takes you on a journey where the song is, you know, the battle belongs to the Lord, and we're letting the battle slow. But by the end of the song, we're glorifying God. We start with honoring Him, and we end up with this amazing worship coming out. You really can feel John's heart to worship God in this song as he builds more each verse.
Hmm. It's no wonder that it was something that it seems John was really excited to return to with the band in later years as a concept, doing the worship albums. Jesus Glorious One. Not one that I was familiar with as, like, not one that we did in church, certainly not that I can remember. So, you know, this album is my only exposure to that song.
It really builds straight out of King of Kings. They sort of drive right from the beginning, a drum lead in, and bang, off they go. The choir is carrying this song again, and you hear John jumping in the chorus. So to me, it really it flows straight out of, it's a good song. The way they've done it is it flows straight out of King of Kings. I think this song would have been an eye opener for church people, for people who maybe weren't used to the band, because this song is rocking. This song is
it blows the roof off. It really does. And if, you know, obviously done, you know, it's designed to go with King of Kings, and or at least this arrangement. And, you know, if a youth band of the church were given the opportunity to lead their church in worship one night in 1989 and managed to get this right, I can imagine them just having the time of their lives running this song and shocking their parents and elders scandalously as they just, you know, pump the volume up, and whoever they've got on the drums just like accelerates faster and faster and throws his head down as he brings the tempo up for Jesus, glorious one. It's fun. I regret that I never got the chance to do it, you know. Why weren't we at a cool church, David?
Oh, I don't know. But the feature in these two songs is that choir with John. He's like a backing support to the choir in these two songs.
Yeah.
And it really is the band. I mean, this song sort of allows Louis to shine a little bit. I mean, this is driving drumming. This is hard rock bordering on soft metal, almost the type of drumming it got to happen here. So it was very tight. The sound was tight. It wasn't drawn out. It wasn't messy. It was very tight sound. The keys and the guitars are sort of really keep it quite tight. And again, Louis's bass is driving underneath it. It's going, it's pumping, and it had a real Petra feel to it. Without the vocal of John Schlitt, it still had a very Petra feel to it.
Yeah. Now we got a couple of ballads, worship songs. Mm-hmm. Like we make that contrast. Take Me In. Now, Take Me In is one that I really listened to. I was really struck by listening to it again for this album. So my friend, sort of talking about his experience with this song, it's quite a deep, quite an intense worship song, actually, which, you know, I was not familiar with. Another one that I'm not familiar with.
Yeah, again, they start this one very simple. The keyboard intro, they're keeping it simple. John Larry does some really nice stuff. The pads almost sound angelic at times. The song is Take Me Into the Holy of Holies. It's taking me into the presence of God. And this song really does take a person into the presence of God. The way they structure it, the sound they're doing gives you the feel of the glory of God surrounding you. And that's what's going to happen when you enter the Holy of Holies. The glory of God surrounds you and envelops you. And that sound is produced musically. And then again, John starts in that low register and it's really nice. And it really resounds quite well.
Mm.
Then in the second verse, they bring the female vocals in, and it gives a really nice angelic feel to the song. And then in the third verse, John hits his regular range, and it is like we are entering the presence of God. It just sounds phenomenal. And I mean, this song, when I hear this song, this is one of the songs that I can't help but be drawn into lifting. My heart just lifts to God and wants to worship him when I hear this song.
It's a very atmospheric song as well. John's doing something on the keys here, just to like creating, like he's using a pad that's just creating an atmosphere as the song continues, that is a bit ethereal, and but yeah, causes you to be reflecting, and yeah, it's really something. This song is really something, and I'm glad to have it in the form that we have it on this album, even if we never experienced it growing up in church. You experienced it more than I, because you listened to the album more than I did. Salvation Belongs, we've talked about, is like just is the world standard. This arrangement of Salvation Belongs is different to how we ever sang it when I was in church.
But I really like this one.
I have no problems with it. The dissonance I have is just in the difference. I'm used to this as we sang it very much as a really stripped back ballad type of worship song. Very, very gentle. It builds in the same way that this arrangement builds, but you know, probably softer on the drums is how we would sing it growing up.
This is what I think Petra are trying to do. They are trying to take songs that those who've grown up in church are hearing, well, this is how it's always been done, and Petra go, no. That Bob and John are going, no, we want to give you something different. This is how it can sound. This is, let's bring us into this. I mean, the power is back. The verse is kept simple with the keys, and then the pre-chorus, the band all hit in, and you've got your power chords, and you've got your drums, you've got everything nailing it, and they get this great sound. The supporting vocals are hit into that chorus. I actually personally would have liked the first chorus through to have just been kept with John's vocals. I really would have loved to have heard John just do it, because the range and the style, the way they've done this, it really supports that they've done John doing the verse, and I thought they could have had John doing the first chorus. And then you've got the choir coming in the second verse, really prominent. And I thought that's how I would have liked to have heard it, a little bit like that. But you know, the choir, they build it. Then we get the breakdown in here. We get the breakdown in the back end of the song, breakdown just the chorus and the drums before everyone builds back up. And what I really love is the way they finish it with John just letting loose on forever and ever, amen. And it just, he launches and he hits those power notes like only John can.
Yeah, no, you're absolutely right there. No. Now, following King of Glory, we've got a stretch of, what's that? One, two, three, four, five songs that I can definitively say were not a part of my experience growing up. I only would have known from this album. It's almost like was this side B? Does side B start at track 8?
Yeah, this is side B.
Okay.
No Weapon Formed is the beginning of side B, and it's interesting that they do it. It's like a we get this sort of this short three song stretch. It's basically like a medley, like you would do in church.
Yeah.
You used to do songs blended one into the other. It's a medley, and it has that feel to it. We're going into a medley of three songs that lift it all up.
Kicks off to a great start. Like, there's almost an element, this is like a whole second album in some ways. Like this album is a really rich experience. There's a lot to it, and it's great. But No Weapon Formed Against Us. What a great song. What a fun worship song. Again, we're still coming out of that tradition of it's primarily a choral. It's about the group, but now we're getting kind of complex, because we got a fast tempo, we got a complex rhythm in the lyrics to sing. But you nail that, and as these guys do, they're professional musicians. The guys singing together, just Yeah, it's really tight, which is obviously you're going to get that with a professional band, but it's another one that's energizing. It's a real energizing song.
Mm. You know, yeah, it is, and you know, it moves quick. You know, it, John is featured prominently, and the choir is going with him, and so No Weapon Form sort of takes off and goes, and then you get this interesting transition, sort of a very awkward drum transition, and then we move into I Will Celebrate, and I Will Celebrate is a celebration.
Yes, yeah, absolutely, and you're right. Like, it is interesting. That transition does feel almost awkward.
It's interesting when we were talking with Bob. We talked a little bit about Bob. Sort of talked a little bit about the use of programming on Beat the System, and we asked him point blank, because I know there's been some discussions in the threads of our releases, of our podcast releases, about the use of programming drums, and we asked Bob, put it on the line, lay it on the line, apart from Beat the System, any other album, were drum programming used? And he said, yes, on Petra Praise. This Means War, no. Back to the Street, no. On Fire, no. That was all Louis Weaver. Petra Praise, there was some programming, and I think this is an example of it.
Yeah.
I'm not sure that this transition and this intro to I Will Celebrate could have been done by Louis without help of some programming.
Yeah, it has that sound to it. And, you know, it's also fair enough. You, for all the high hopes they had for the album, they're also trying to create something of a homogenized experience so that people can use this in their churches. And to do that, you've actually got to pull back a little bit on the dynamics of a drummer. I don't know if you have ever had the experience, Dave. I remember this so clearly. Being asked to lead at Mum and Dad's church once as a young person, and recruiting a bunch of friends to come and help out so that we could do it the way that I like doing it. And after the first song, one of the little old ladies up the back stood up and just interrupted me as I was trying to share a Bible reading and said, excuse me, those drums are just too loud. I'm sorry. Can you turn them down, please? And I just turned around and looked helplessly at my mate. You know,
I was at a church where the drummer had to put towels over the drums because they were considered too loud. So I know that feeling. So, but look, again, we get back to it. This song is a celebration. The drums might be a little bit work, you know, need a bit of help and a bit of support, but the sound is there. The keys, everyone sort of comes in and builds this feel, and we get the choir are back. They're leading. The choir are leading again, and then John takes the lead on the chorus, and then the choir comes back.
Yeah.
And we do that. We rotate that through a couple of times, so we get that. That feel we're building, it almost feels, and I'm going to share this a little bit, but there's starting to develop that congregational feel to these couple of songs. This little medley brings a congregational feel to it.
Oh, absolutely, and it's so good. I think it reaches an absolute peak with I Will Sing Praise. Another one that I wish that I could have known and sung in church growing up but it's just the energy that it is infused in this medley is
well in the I Will Celebrate not I Will Sell in the Spirit of the Lord.
Sorry, yeah, Spirit, of the
Spirit
Lord.
Of the Lord, you John moves into the worship leader. He starts calling out the line of the song and everyone sings it. And he really backs out a little bit and is doing the worship leader feel. He's leading worship and it creates that atmosphere again. It gives it that church feel. The choir's dominating vocally, but John's, you know, I will celebrate. You know, sorry, I You know, when the Spirit of the Lord, and the Spirit of the Lord moves in my heart, I will dance. Like, you know, I will sing. You know, it's sort of he's calling it out, and the band are singing it with him. It's quite a powerful feel. He's calling people into. He's literally calling people to come and join him in the Spirit of the Lord. To come and be a part of that journey with him. It backs off at the end a little bit and slows right down. And when it does that, I would have liked it to have backed off to just John. Instead, we get the choir and you can't hear John at all. But, you know, it's, I guess, you know, again, we're talking about that choral feel, but I think at that point it would have been good. And then we go back into I Will Celebrate. John, I will celebrate.
Yeah.
And then, John's there and he's in the chorus, but, you know, again, it's that feel creates that atmosphere. We go back and forth between the songs and then it moves from, you know, we sort of get a finish there, but it opens itself straight into I Will Sing Praise.
Yeah.
So we've got this great praise little section. I will celebrate God. It's upbeat. It's enjoyable. The Spirit of the Lord is with us. We're gonna do it, and we're gonna sing praise to God, our King. I think it's a great connection of songs there.
It absolutely is. Now it's contrasted quite nicely, I think, by the inclusion of another worship song at this point. Hallowed Be Thy Name, which is beautifully arranged in this case, and another example of John, for a good portion of the song, singing a little bit understated, like not at the top of his range, but just a simple repeated refrain, "Hallowed be Thy name." This song is
beautiful. It's lovely. It really is.
It really is.
John Lowry really takes the lead musically here, and he creates a really it's a very pretty sound. Ron Cates has a lot of really complex bass lines in there. He really carries the transitions in the musical lines with that bass guitar if you listen closely. And John's lower register, you know what? I would have loved to have heard him use the sound he does in this song. I would have loved to have heard him do it on another album. Like just a mellow song, a ballad song on another album within that range, I thought would have been beautiful. I don't know what song. Maybe as we move through the next few albums, we might find one that might. Oh, that would have been nice if he'd done it in that lower range that he used on "Hallowed Be Thy Name." But this is just so lovely. And then he starts to lift. Lift into that usual range, and you can really feel John's worship heart coming through. And then they do the key change, and oh yep. My goodness, that key change, John, just presence of God.
Yeah, I mean, there's not a lot more to be said about it. It's it's really something. It's really beautiful. It's a song I can listen to a lot over and over.
Absolutely.
It's really great. It's follow-up, on the other hand, we've already had quite a few comments through Facebook and the people that we interact with on this album. I don't know what was going through anyone's mind when they thought, you know what a good song to pick would be? Friends. All in the Family of God. But, you know, it's there.
I think I honestly wonder if this was just a personal favorite of one of the band members. I really love this song. We need to record it. Okay, let's do it. It's because it's not really praise or worship. It's they create a fun sound, but this is not really a praise or a worship song. This is a how we interact with each other song.
Yes, I mean you could say that it's yeah, something much more about the community of faith than about worshiping God. It's different. Our mum has a real soft spot for the doo-wop groups of the early, like late 50s, early 60s.
His early 60s,
that's what this is. And there's a kitsch. There was a song that I remember that kind of came out. I don't think we ever actually did it in church, thank goodness. But I remember listening to recordings of it, and like the opening was like going bubbling. Do you remember? Does that ring a bell with you?
I used to love listening to it in the car, but we never did it in church.
Yeah. Like it's something. Mum and Dad had their own tape of like a bunch of these old like stuff from the 70s and early 80s, and a lot of them were in that an older style or a genre type of thing. It always felt gimmicky, like it's the kind of thing that someone starts playing it and instantly I stop taking it seriously. And no offense, you might be right that this was someone's favorite song, but I'm like, I stop taking the song seriously because I'm not, as soon as someone starts saying doo-wop, doo-wah, I'm not in the presence of God anymore. I'm in some kind of a 50s diner where I'm expecting guys in little like pork pie hats to run out and sing into their tomato sauce bottles.
I just think of Back to the Future. I'm waiting.
To
jump on a skateboard and ride through the streets. You know, it's The sound, it's so it really that look, they capture the sound of that, but they do capture the sound. The sax is great. The saxophone is fantastic. John creates a good sound. You've got the ladies doing the chorus refrain and the men doing the bop, shooby wop sort of stuff underneath. John Lowry has a really nice 50s feel to his keyboard sound. So, I mean, they're really able to capture the sound. I wonder if maybe they were trying to appeal. Oh, I don't know. Maybe they were trying to appeal to some of the slightly the parents, that maybe the older parents, the, you know, of the kids that are going to be listening to. Hey, I listened to that sort of sound when I was a kid. Sort of, you know, that sort of feel. But
maybe what I say, I mean, the effect of it is, this song kind of takes me out of the album for a moment, because it's so, like, you're right in that they capture the sound amazingly well. Like Petra, as it turns out, could have been a fairly effective, rock and roll tribute band.
You know? And we're gonna come back to that one when we hit Unseen Power. We're going to come back to that idea when we hit Unseen Power, but that's for later down the line.
But it is actually quite out of sync with the sound. The rest of the album is very consistent. All the rest
except
of the songs
for this one song.
Very consistent. This one song stands out as a very different thing, almost like another band came in and recorded something. We have a tendency, and there's been a tendency in the language it's been used to reflect on it negatively. And I suppose mostly what I just want to highlight, it's different and it feels out of place. But it's not badly done for what it is.
No.
It's not
it's
badly
good for what done. It is. No. But I think. Yeah, you say it does take you out of the album, and it does. It does have that feel. But thankfully, I think what they do after this helps bring you back in.
Well,
because
that's
we transition to a live, semi-live. We'll talk about this in just a moment. But we were transitioned to the live recordings of I Will Call Upon the Lord and Exalt. I Exalt Thee. You've got the live feel. The band alive, which, you know, for the first time since Captured in Time and Space, we've got that feeling, and for the first time ever, John Schlitt in a live setting.
In a live recording with the team.
And now, of course, for me, these two songs really speak to me because, as I shared last episode, when I went to the On Fire Tour concert, they did these two songs as part of the set and as part of the preview of what's coming out, but of that worship set. So I remember being there live when they did them in Sydney and the great feel to it. And it really brings you back. It's great. I love it. We'll get into that. The keys and bass start this song, you know, dun, 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 they're building, dun, dun, dun. You know, the drums, they're nice and tight. They sing it. Bob, the guitars come in on the chorus. They go double time in the chorus. And, you know, the Lord liveth, blessed be the rock. And they're going and they're jumping around. And then they back off and they bring, you know, John introduces, we're going to bring the audience in. We're going to do it in the round. Clearly edited for time constraints. I've been there live. It takes them a lot longer to separate the crowd and get everyone going and practicing and how it all happens when they do the round. One side sings with the band. Ronnie would be really prominent in helping lead that side, and the other side sing with John. I'd just like to say that when I was there live, I was singing with the band and we won. We clearly won the round. But it's clearly edited. Look, because they've edited out obviously that bit to fit it in and make it tight and all that. I want to get to something else about the audience in just a moment. But your thoughts? I've talked for a couple of minutes there. Your thoughts on this?
So I've got a weird reaction in relationship with this song. I like "I Will Call Upon the Lord." It's one of those songs that's almost the perfect kind of song for a group. I love that aspect of being able to do it in the round and split into parts. I was introduced to this song with the wrong lyrics, though. And I don't know if you might have remembered at some point and whether this was a thing in Australia or what. We had an identical song. It was the same chords. It was the same melody, largely the same melody. But we had different lyrics. And I
just
can't...
one line of different lyrics. There was one line different.
Not the one that I'm thinking of. Because I'm thinking of the one that I'm singing was and this was perfectly introduced to like a youth context too, because at the like that first beat, the I, we all had to do a karate punch. And then every time we did the start of the next bar, we shoot with another punch. You know, that was how you interested the young people. All right, we're going to do karate while we do this. But it was, I will magnify the Lord who is worthy to be praised. Repeat, I will magnify the Lord who is worthy to be praised. Then the chorus was, Hosanna, blessed be the rock. Blessed be the rock,
be the rock of
my
salvation. Yeah.
Hosanna, and repeat. These lyrics have quite a lot of meat to them. Like, I will call upon the Lord. The way Petra's doing it here, quite a lot of meat. And our American brethren out there, maybe weigh in. Do you recall this song? Does anyone recall this mutated version that I experienced as a kid? Or sort of this limbless version that I experienced as a kid? It's kind of so it was always a weird, bizarre thing. When I first came to this song, I'm like, oh, Petra's doing it wrong. Now I'm kind of like, well,
I think we got it wrong.
We were doing it wrong. And I don't know who to blame. I a couple of those old youth leaders of mine come to mind, and I don't know which one to blame, David, but I want to blame
one of them. Yeah, I'll blame one of them. I'll blame it with you. I was there. I saw those ones. But look, let's point out the one thing that I want to be a little bit critical of: the audience participation in this song. When they bring the audience in, when you listen to it, I was listening to it really, really tight, and I think it's very clear that the audience sound has been piped in. It's been overdubbed over whatever audience was actually there when they were performing this. And I say it for two reasons. Number one, there are a lot of female voices prominent on both sides of the audience when they do, when you listening to the crowd singing it, which, you know, honestly, if you've got a big crowd of mixed ages and a lot of guys there as well, that's not going to be the case. The second reason I think it's piped in is this. I took the opportunity when I was at work today to listen to the Spanish version. And I was very interested to hear this song, having had that concept, wondering if it was piped in, wondering if it's been overdubbed. I had to listen to the Spanish version. And the Spanish version is the crowd sings in Spanish, which makes it very clear that this has been layered, re-recorded, whatever they've done, they've overlaid the sound of the crowd with studio singers. I'm a little bit, I would have liked to have heard the original crowd. I really would have. I probably get they want to make sure it's in tune and on note and fits the tightness that they're trying to put for this feel. It's a little criticism, but it's something that really stood out to me in listening this time.
I hear you. I would gather that a part of that is also possibly due to the quality of the recording they were able to get. Like, you do
it's very hard to record the audience.
They sit down afterwards to go over, well, look, like, the band nailed it, but the volume and the fullness of sound from the crowd is not there. What a shame. Well, let's lay in some additional tracks, you know.
I think that's exactly what they've done. And I agree. I agree with all those reasons why. I just think it's quite noted when you listen to it carefully and you hear the way it's done, you can tell that it's been done. It makes it very obvious that it's happened. And you know, that's just something that really stood out to me. But when you move into the next song, when we get our closing song of We Exalt Thee, that just fades away. This sounds like it's straight out of a concert.
Mm-hmm. Well, this song, even apart from my experience with this album, this song is hands down my favorite praise and worship song of this era. I don't know how you feel about it. It was one that it featured heavily in my very, very early years. So the first church that I remember going to, this was a favorite chorus that we did. And it's one that then kept popping up every now and then. And it's a song that seemed to have the capacity to grab, like, young people who were really into music and really into being a part of the praise experience of their church would discover or rediscover this song and say, hey, this older song is powerful and beautiful and amazing, and just want to keep bringing it up. I know that was true for me when I started leading worship. And ultimately, this was one I always loved to bring in. You know, on a subtle note, it actually matches really, 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 really well with Third Day's rendition of Agnus Dei and Holy, You Are Holy. You can throw this on the end of that, and it's really, anyway. So that's my feeling about the song. This is interestingly, this isn't the full song. This is just the chorus,
the chorus
which, refrain, or the refrain, which is so simple, but it's the right kind of simple.
Yes,
this is another example,
and they keep it simple and musically. They don't complicate it. It starts quiet. It builds. It's just pretty much some power chords. They don't overdo it. They don't take off and do things that they don't need to do. Backing vocal wise, you can clearly hear you get they layer it. You get one backing vocal, then a second backing vocal, and yes, we get a bit of a choir pipe in at the back end of the song, but outside of that, it's very clear. The rest of it's the band. The guitars take it up a notch. But you can just picture John with his arms raised. It's true worship. This song is done in a way that is true worship. It is a great finish to an album of praise and worship because they're glorifying the name of the Lord absolutely. At the finish, and you can just picture them doing it. I remember when they did this live, we were it really took you into the presence of God.
Yes.
It's interesting how they sort of have to fade it out. And the reason they would have done that is because when you do it live, when they were doing it live, they do this "We Exalt Thee" bit, and the band had back out completely, and then you'd sing it a cappella.
Yeah, and everyone.
And then they launch back in, but then they go from there and launch back into "Somebody's Gonna Praise His Name" because that was how they were tying together the whole, whole back end of that of the concert. Okay. So you couldn't have that come up in this rendition on the album. So they would have needed to fade it out so that they don't capture any part of that finish to it. But this is a truly magnificent ending to this album. And it fits the beginning. The album title, "The Rock Cries Out," Petra being the rock crying out to God. And that's exactly what we get here at the end here. The rock, Petra, the band, crying out to God in worship.
This is another album, kind of for different reasons, but in a similar way to how I described "This Means War." This is an album you put in because you're listening to the whole album. I don't come to this album and say, I feel like listening to "I Will Sing Praise" today. No, I'm coming to this album because I want to put the album on and experience the album from beginning to end.
Yeah.
No one song really rises above or comes out at you or stands out. The song that stands out in this, we've talked about before, stands out for the wrong reasons. But apart from that, it's a journey. It's an experience. It's something that you can use in quiet times of your own to worship God. And the fact that, again, I'm blown away by the fact that this was 1989 and, the band that was known for being, what they do is worship music. They wouldn't come out for another 6 years with an album.
That's right.
And then, it was another 5 or 6 years after that, 5 years that other bands started to go, hey, here's an idea. Why don't we record us doing some worship songs? Like 11 years before it became the thing to do, or the norm. Petra's doing it. And
they did it in a way that, like you said, the album, I mean, I've been listening to this. I've been going through a really rough time at work recently, and I've been listening to this doing morning walks and jogs and runs. And I'll tell you, I've gone into a time going, oh, man, I'm not looking forward to today, and listened to this album, got home going, man, I'm really feeling close to God at the moment. That's what this album does. It draws you into the presence of God. A lot of these other albums, there are albums out there that you get a few songs that are good, not the whole album doesn't bring you to that point where you're going, I really feel like I've entered the presence of God.
That's exactly it. That's right. So it's really something. It's outlier is probably the wrong word to use. It's something that stands apart to the rest of Petra's discography. My personal opinion, I don't think they ever recapture this either. Another two worship worship albums that they put out
and we'll talk about those when we get to them.
I don't think they recapture the same atmosphere or feel that they have here, but they're their own experience and totally good. But we've referenced.
Sorry, you finish.
I was just saying this is something really special. You know.
Yeah. So we've referenced. We've clearly highlighted. Look, you know, no one song itself probably hits the point that you're going to sit there and say this needs to go in the playlist. No. I don't think Bob's own songs aren't quite in the playlist. They're good. So we said this album is good. This album has power. That's not the purpose. This album is not about songs that are going to be long-term memorable. It is a different journey and drawing into the presence of God. So we don't really have any changes to the playlists this week. There's no additions in there. We're not because of the nature of the album. We're not looking at adding any songs into the playlist of songs that Bob Hartman didn't write, because that, again, this is not the purpose of this album. And so we've made a choice to not include any from that. So really the only list we're looking at this week is, you've talked about this album is unique. This album is from beginning to end. It's this, there's a lot to it. You listen to it for that purpose. How does it compare to some of these other albums? And we just said it doesn't, they don't ever capture this feel again.
Mm.
How does it compare? Where do we rank it compared to some of this other stuff?
Okay, so I'm going to be frustrating here for a minute. You may feel differently, but here's what I'm proposing. I think, given the nature of what this album is, and for me, understanding the background of the album and the place that it holds in Bob Hartman's heart after all these years feeds how I consider the album. I think we can't really hold Petra Prays The Rock Cries Out in comparison with the majority of Petra's discography, certainly their rock output. I think a special orb or spiritual bubble forms around this album, and it hovers in orbit around their discography like a moon orbiting the earth. It's a unique artifact of the band's existence. And I will go as far to say that the following, if anything, if they're going to compare with anything, it's only going to be Petra Prays 2 and Revival.
Revival
was the third one, wasn't it?
Mm-hmm.
So I'm going to suggest that this may be this weird little independent mini list. If we want to do the comparisons, the worship albums are in their own category. I don't think you can hold them in this with the same measure that you are measuring the rest of their rock output.
Yeah, look, I'm hearing what you're saying. I think that, however, I think that the sound that is generated from the band, the feel of the songs, it is Petra. It is who they are, and it is something they've put out. And I think that there can be some comparisons made. I believe this is a very, I rate this album very highly. We talked the other week about albums from start to finish, and you've just said it a moment ago. This album from start to finish is a very, very good album with one glaring exception. And I feel that Friends is just that there is a glaring thing there with Friends. But I think this is one of their top three or four albums of all time. I really do. I'm not sure that I would I'm wondering whether it really is the best album they've ever put together, with even in spite of Friends and how it's different. I really wonder if this is the best album they've ever put out to date. I mean, when you compare it, when we've got at the top of the list, we've got This Means War. We talked about that as the start to finish, the journey, and that overall concept. You've got Captured in Time and Space, and you've got More Power to You, sort of sitting in the top three, and then you've got On Fire. I definitely feel Petra Praise as an overall album is better than On Fire. And I think you really, it comes down to, like, they're different songs, and I accept that, and there is a different level. But I do feel that in the same way Captured in Time and Space being live is a different feel to a studio album. A worship album, a praise and worship album, is a different feel, but it's still part of who they are. And I think it can be considered in that way.
I'm going to ask if we can agree to disagree, just in terms of putting it in the rankings. I'm happy for, like, if you want to slot it in there. Part of what feeds into this for me is that this is, you know, we've got two songs written by Bob. Everything else comes from other songwriters. The scope of this as a project is actually so much bigger than Petra. This wasn't even recorded in one studio. It was recorded across several studios with a significant team of extra producers and mixers, no fewer than seven additional background vocalists that they pulled in to have significant input. This is a vaster project in its scope than
absolutely
than there are.
I agree with all that. Well, let me put it this way. If you could only listen to one Petra album, if I said you're going to a desert island and you can only take one Petra album with you, is this the one?
No.
Okay. So if I said you have to choose between this album and Captured in Time and Space, would you take this or Captured in Time and Space?
I'd take Captured in Time and Space.
What about More Power to You? Which one of those two where would you sit? This one or More Power to You? If you could only listen to one of them.
More Power to You.
On Fire or this one?
This one. This one.
And that's why, and that's where I said, and that's how I think it sits in the rankings. I think that's how you're ranking it differently, but in the end, you're asking yourself, which album would I listen to? This one or that one?
Yeah.
And I think that's how we've just sort of come to our point there. I agree with everything that you've said. But I feel maybe that's how we can clarify bringing it into the ranking.
Okay.
Which would you prefer? So there we go. Petra Praise, after that discussion, ladies and gentlemen, Petra Praise comes in as the fourth ranked album in our Petra list. And I guess we'd love to hear your input. How do you feel about what we've just said and what we've shared? Do you think that it needs to be separate from the list? Or do you feel that it's the best one they've ever released because of the heart of it? Have we ranked it too high because it is worship songs and not stuff really produced by Bob? Really love to get everyone's input onto that. But this has been a great reflection. I've loved doing this album. But I think we're going from glory to glory. With where we're heading.
That's putting it mildly, man. We are about to reach the true mountaintop. I've been hanging, I've been excited, I've been waiting for this next album coming up because possibly more than any other. This is the one that I would put on in my room and pick up my inflatable guitar that I got in a show bag from the Easter show and just air guitar the heck out of it for hours on end.
What I think will be interesting is when we review the next album is it is held in such high esteem by Petra fans. It is generally accepted to be the greatest Petra album ever. I'll be really interested to see where it sits as we analyze it, as we look at the songs, as we look at the music, and as not just where it sits as an album, but where these individual songs sit. Are we really going to see? We've talked about how we've had a few songs here and there slip into our top playlist, but we haven't made a massive indent at the top end of the playlist since John Schlitt joined the band. I'm really interested to see whether we are going to see some significant changes in our playlist, whether we're going to see this album come in at the top of our rankings or not. I think there's a lot of questions that are going to be answered with our next journey. And on top of that, we don't just have an album to talk about. We've got a movie.
I know. We get to exercise my other great passion in life, and I get to put on my film critic's hat and talk about the straight-to-video TV movie that was produced to coincide with the album.
So it's going to be a great time, and we really encourage you, everyone, to join us on our next episode when we listen to the critically acclaimed, the award-winning Beyond Belief. And I think that podcast is going to be beyond belief. Look, we had to do This Means War over two podcasts. Beyond Belief, I'm wondering, we might end up having to do three. Oh, who knows? We'll see how long
there's enough there. We'll see what happens.
But no, look, we thank every single one of you for joining us on this journey. Again, we are humbled that you have been listening to us, and join the conversations. We say it every time. Join the conversations. What do you think of Petra Praise? What do you think of the song choices? What do you remember? What did this do for your journey of worship? We'd love to hear you. Join the conversations on our Facebook page. Through email. Lindsay's going to give you all the links in just a moment, but come and join in and let us know what this album means to you.
Yeah, as always, guys, you can find us on Facebook, On Rock, A Petrospective. Please like, share, give us a wave, give us a comment. You can reach us directly at wemeanrock@gmail.com. We love to hear your questions. We love to interact with you. If you're enjoying the podcast, if this has been a bit of a thrill for you, please take a moment to consider rating and reviewing us. It's nice to bump our profile a little bit. And guys, just want to reiterate, check out the Wild Man and Steve show, not just because we're on it, but because it's a really great and enjoyable show. There are another couple of great characters out there talking Christian rock. As always, I thank you as well for pressing play on Rock the Petrospective for this week, for Petra Praise, for the rock crying out. I'm Lindsay Hall.
And I'm Dave Hall.
And we'll catch you.